we're all stocked up here.
But why hide a big secret? People are smart. They can handle it.
A person is smart. People are dumb, panicky, dangerous animals, and you know it.
Good morning to you, and welcome into another edition of The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, driving the big bus, and hoping you're having a great day. And thanks for joining me. I appreciate you being there every day. I really do. For a little while this morning, I thought we wouldn't be here because for some reason, Facebook Live was just locked up. Just got that little spinning arrow telling me, hey, hold on. I got it. Hang on. Wait, hold on. No, seriously, have a cup of coffee and hang on. We'll be right back. And I just never got anything from it. So, but finally, it decided to come up. And it's just generally, it seems to be moving a little slowly. Facebook does this morning. I've just been checking around and it's loading really slow. Now, that could be squirrels playing pinochle on the line somewhere around my studio, but you never know. At any rate, we're up and running. Thank you. Thank you very much. We are here. And what a day it's going to be here. I'm if you're like me and you keep track of the news, you watch things, I get up in the morning and I go find a cup of coffee. My sense of smell is pretty much the only thing working about that time of the morning. It's, you know, 5-ish. This morning it was more like 4:30-ish. And just kind of woke up and the alarm goes off and in 30 minutes, I might as well just get up. And I noticed that my wife was already up. She was up before her alarm as well. So I just went ahead and got up and followed the scent of coffee to the kitchen and then moseyed into the, and got my wife a refill in the process and moseyed into the living room and sat down in the chair, grabbed my iPad and started scanning the news to see what I had missed overnight while I was sleeping mostly. And it's amazing what you can miss overnight. But also I turn on a news channel. I flip through news channels and kind of see what's happening. And I saw something interesting on Fox and Friends and we're going to get to that in a couple of minutes. But first off, coming your way on the podcast today, Hollywood actors are calling to punish Georgia because a Democrat lost the election there. A judge has barred the United States from enforcing President Trump's asylum ban. This is going to be another Muslim ban situation. They're all going to be screaming it's racism. Well, they already have been, but now they're going to say, see, even a judge agrees. Yeah, just that's coming. There is a docuseries on A&E about the Clintons. We'll look at that. Jim Acosta's press pass has been reinstated, and depending on where you look, it's being yanked again, and in some places it's being turned into a yo-yo with a big string on it, so they can it's just a weird situation. And as a result, the White House has actually had to put some rules into place, and we'll look at those rules coming up in just a bit, and also what's happening with the White House Correspondents Association annual dinner that caused so much of a stir last year. Hopefully we'll get to all of that. There's actually more in my stack, but that's as far as I'm willing to commit to talking about, because I hope I get to all of that. First off, let's take a look at what's happening in Georgia. Hollywood leftists are not happy that Brian Kemp prevailed in the governor's race in Georgia. Their chosen candidate, Stacey Abrams, had been endorsed by both Barack Obama and Oprah Winfrey. Oh my, my! In spite of that, she fell over 50,000 votes short, and Kemp beat her handily. But despite that, folks on the left and Hollywood actors pushed the conspiracy theory that voters had been suppressed. Remember, I've been talking about voter suppression. That's a buzzword, a buzz term, voter suppression, that the left is using a lot now, because when Democrats don't win, it's voter suppression. When Republicans don't win, it's the will of the people. Mm-hmm. Write that on a small child. And that somehow kept, Kemp has cheated, despite not having any evidence that cheating, in fact, did occur. Abrams fanned that flame by refusing to call Kemp the legitimate governor of Georgia and refusing to concede, saying that would be conceding the election had been conducted correctly. Abrams told CNN's Jake Tapper Sunday there had been a deliberate, this is a quote, a deliberate and intentional disinvestment and I think destruction of the administration of elections in the state of Georgia. Now, Hollywood actors are calling for Hollywood to boycott the state of Georgia with the inevitable hashtag campaign, hashtag boycott Georgia. It's all one word, boycott Georgia, because a hashtag shows they truly care. And, of course, standing out in front, waving her little sign, is the one, the only, the Alyssa Milano. Huh. She says there are over 20 productions shooting in Georgia. Is the entertainment industry willing to support the economy of a totally corrupt state that suppresses democracy? Where the winner isn't the best choice for the people, but the best schemer or crook? Well, Alyssa, don't you live in California where that happens all the time? Ron Perlman. You remember, oh, you ladies, you remember Ron Perlman from Beauty and the Beast? Yes. He says, to all my friends who are studio and network executives, if you choose to shoot movies and TV in Georgia, don't bother to call me. Hmm. Wow. Okay. We'll miss you. Bye-bye. Bradley Whitford says, Brian Kemp is a corrupt, homophobic, unapologetic disenfranchiser of African-American voters. If he seizes power, Hollywood needs to use its leverage and pull out of Georgia. Studios need to pull to put their money where their mouth is and stand up to hate. Well, from what I'm seeing here, Mr. Whitford, they'd be standing up to you and your pals because there's a lot of hate spewing from your side of things. Stephen Pasquale. You choose your pronunciation. He says 100% agreed. Billions of Hollywood dollars spent and created in Georgia. We can do something about this. Boycott Georgia. By the way, I need to go back and do that the proper way. It's a hashtag in all one word, so it's boycott Georgia. But the call didn't go over well. This, of course, would not hurt Kemp per se, but would harm the people of the movie industry who work in Georgia. And they're basically saying, pick the leftist we want, or pick the leftist we want you to pick, or we'll punish you for exercising your vote as you choose. And others, a guy named Doug Priscilla writes, yeah, let's punish all the people working on those shows and everyone that's making money in ancillary functions. Be careful not to get drunk with Twitter power. Elizabeth Darcy writes, so now you're calling for the people of Georgia to have their choice taken away because you don't agree with it? This is what fascists do. They control how you vote and who is placed in power. Nick Searcy with the International Film and Television Association says, the tax increases you voted for in California are what moved these productions to Georgia, Alyssa Milano. Thanks for writing. Now, remember yesterday we talked about the accusation that had been made, remember, by Ari Berman, who said that 1.5 million people had been purged by Brian Kemp, 53,000 registrations were on hold, 4.5 hour waiting lines at polling places, 214 polling places were closed, Democrats were falsely accused of cyber crimes, candidates were overseeing their own election, remember that? It was demonstrably false. We went over that yesterday. And the craziness is that every bit of that can be debunked. Every bit of it can be debunked. There's reasons for every last bit of it. There are laws that the voters, the people of Georgia put into place to protect their elections. And that's why all of these things happened. That 1.5 million people purged happened over like something like a 12-year period. Little by little, registrations put on hold. There were valid reasons for those registrations being put on hold. Very valid reasons. Part of that was exact match that, you know, the thing where everything in your application has to match. And a lot of that had to do not just with signatures. That's something we keep hearing about, was people's signatures.
Well, your signatures didn't match.
Well, no. No, if you don't remember the last four digits of your own Social Security number, odds are you're going to get tossed because that's the form of ID they depend on. And you'll hear in just a moment, about 75% of those were because of that serial number match. And that was the issue. In fact, Brian Kemp was on Fox and Friends this morning. He talked with Brian Kilmeade, and this is how it went.
After a fierce battle, the Georgia governor's race finally over, kinda, with Brian Kemp winning by 55,000 votes. His opponent, though, Stacey Abrams, conceding the race, but not exactly accepting the results.
It was not a free and fair election. We had thousands of Georgians who were purged from the rolls wrongly. It was not fair to the thousands that were put on hold with their registrations. Brian Kemp oversaw for 8 years the systematic and systemic dismantling of our democracy, and that means there could not be free and fair elections in Georgia this year.
What an accusation. Here to react in his first national TV interview since winning the governor's race is governor-elect, soon-to-be former Secretary of State for Georgia, Brian Kemp. Governor, you won by 55,000 votes, but clearly Stacey Abrams is not accepting it. Basically, it seems like she's saying you cheated by canceling 1.4 million people off voter rolls since 2011. What's your reaction?
Well, you know, look, Brian, I'm moving on. I'm the governor-elect. The election's been certified. This is indeed over, and I'm looking forward to serving hardworking Georgians, and that includes all of them, by the way. But look, it's unfair for her to blame, especially local elections officials that are following the law when it comes to these things for registration, how things are conducted on election day. In Georgia, we have secure, accessible, fair elections. We make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And we saw the easy to vote part. We had 1.4 million more voters in this election than we did in the last governor's race, a historic turnout. We have a million more people on the rolls because I pushed for and implemented online voter registration where people could register to vote 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If my opponent and her activist groups had used the online system, they wouldn't have had as many problems as they did with folks that they were registering. And by the way, the pending list, my daughter was one of those folks on the pending list because she was 17 and a half when she registered, and you have to be 18 to be on the list. So the day she turned 18, she came off pending, went on the voter rolls, and she voted for me on November the 6th. So the process worked down here. We're proud of that. You know, nobody's questioning the Democrats' wins, knocking off one of our congresswomen in the state of Georgia. They're not questioning the local races that they won. So this is really just political rhetoric, but that's in the past. I'm moving forward and looking forward to governing our great state.
She says that you set up less polling locations, especially in urban areas.
Well, that's just a mistruth. The county elections officials, the local elections boards have the sole responsibility for how many polling locations they have and where they are. That has been the rule of law and the way it works in Georgia under Republican and Democrat secretaries of state. So that's just not true. And by the way, the one county that this was an issue with before the election, they are controlled by Democrats. You know, so she's blaming me for a problem that they created. It's just ridiculous. And people didn't buy it in this election, which is why I got the most votes ever in a Georgia governor's race.
She also says this exact match law didn't work on our to her behalf. What is the exact match law?
Well, look, we have laws on the books in Georgia. And I know she may not like some of the laws, but we take an oath of office, and the county elections officials have a duty to follow the law and the elections rules that we have in our state. And we check citizenship. We require people to show a photo ID when they go vote. And we verify this information before people go on the voter rolls. But you know, if people had simply used the online system where you just put your driver's license information in, they could get registered to vote. 75% of the people on this list, Brian, could not fill out the last four of their social. Governor, she's blaming me and local elections officials for that. It's ridiculous.
Right, and she is, to her credit, pushing back on Hollywood, who wants to boycott your state because they think this whole election was on the up and up. So give Stacey Abrams credit for that. Congratulations
Absolutely.
To you, Governor. You won by 55,000 votes and the biggest turnout, one of the biggest turnouts ever. Thanks so much.
Wow. And there you have it, right from Governor-elect Kemp's mouth. He's talking about the laws. He's talking about how it operated. And one of the things they're talking about is purging rolls, and purging voters is a common and normal practice really pretty much everywhere. That's why before you vote, you make sure you are registered, especially if you haven't voted in a while. And if you don't do that, well, that's on you. And the purge law had nothing to do with Brian Kemp. Everything to do actually with Democrats. It was a law passed in 97 by a Democrat legislature and a Democrat governor in Georgia. So Stacey Abrams is just making a big show. And that's what progressives do when they don't get what they want. They double down on stupid, and they keep claiming that they are the victim in the scenario. And the trouble with that is that people don't bother to check, and they just believe them. And you know that from chatting with your friends on social media. More to come after the break. You are listening to The Daily Perspective.
Northern Tool and Equipment.
My girlfriend has given me a pet name.
I'm afraid to ask.
Snuggle Muffin.
No, it isn't.
And she uses it in public.
Okay, so give your girlfriend a pet name she'll hate, like Thunder Chunky.
I couldn't do that.
I see. Too harsh for Snuggle Muffin. Okay. Drown her out with a 200 mile per hour cordless leaf blower.
Got it. Here she comes.
Hey, Snuggle Muffin. What are you doing, Snuggle? Snuggle. I am so out of here.
Wait. Come back, Thunder Chunky.
There's no problem a little horsepower can't solve. Northern Tool and Equipment.
Oh, poor Snuggle Muffin and Thunder Chunky. Will they ever get things back together again? Listen here for the continuing story. Oh, gosh. Good morning to you. Thanks for being along with us here on the Daily Perspective today. We got folks on Facebook Live. We got you. If you're not on Facebook Live, what that means is probably you are listening one of the other ways. And you're on the podcast. You're listening to the podcast because you subscribe, or possibly you're grabbing the podcast on the TuneIn Radio app. Well, welcome aboard. Thanks a lot for being there. Really appreciate it. By the way, if you're on Facebook Live and you'd like to be able to catch the podcast anytime, you can use the TuneIn Radio app or subscribe through iTunes or the podcast store from Google. That's the Google Podcast app, more precisely. And you can catch the show pretty much anytime you want to, 24/7. Just click on it and start it playing. There you go. But I do appreciate you being here in the mornings when we do the thing on Facebook Live. This morning it was a challenge. I had the spinning arrow of death and I thought it was running, and I posted, "Hey, we're up," and we weren't. But finally we are there. And if you're watching, you can see the Statue of Liberty up on on the screen for the Facebook Live thing. And let's see. Look, what else can we put up there? Oh, let's put the flag up there. That would be good. See, there's the flag. All righty. Moving back into what we were. I don't want to get back to Stacey Abrams again, because that whole situation is just progressives being progressives, and of course progressives following other progressives like lemmings over a cliff, which by the way has been proven it doesn't really happen. But they still follow each other blindly without actually digging for truth. They just source each other. And that's the problem. Their sourcing is other progressives. It's a lot like climate change, where they all source each other. It's a lot like history taught in the schools today. Historians don't actually dig for history and research. They just quote other historians. And if those historians are wrong, then what happens? Well, that's how progressives work. They quote other progressives. And if that progressive that they're quoting is wrong, well, that progressive that they're quoting quoted another one, and that one was probably wrong too. So what's happening is you've got a chain of people who don't actually do their due diligence on something, and they quote the perspectives of people who are wrong. So that's why I tell you all the time, it's important to do your research, do that due diligence, and do some digging and find out what's really going on. You'll be glad you did. Now, we're looking at another situation where progressives are trying to have their way with something that President Trump has tried to put into place. A federal judge in San Francisco yesterday barred the Trump administration from refusing asylum to immigrants who crossed the southern border illegally, likely prompting a legal challenge from the White House. Trump issued a proclamation on November 9th that said anyone who crossed the southern border would be ineligible for asylum. You remember how that is. If you cross the border beyond a an entry point, a point of entry, like Tijuana, where there's thousands of people lined up to come in right now. That should be interesting to see how that plays out. But there are points of entry, legal points of entry you have to cross. This was the position. You have to cross at a legal point of entry in order for us to consider you for asylum. Otherwise, you're breaking the law, and we're just going to bundle you up and send you home. Well, this is not going to happen. That's the problem now. U.S. District Judge John S. Tigger, I could make jokes, who was nominated by President Obama in 2012 to the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California, issued a temporary restraining order after hearing arguments in San Francisco. Now, you notice where this is happening. It's happening in Northern California, which San Francisco in that area, extremely progressive, not just progressive, extremely progressive. And this guy is an Obama appointee, which means this judge is also a progressive, which means he doesn't look at the world honestly. He looks at it through the lens of progressivism. Keep that in mind. The request was made by the ACLU and the Center for Constitutional Rights. That name is wrong. Which quickly sued after President Trump issued the ban this month in response to the caravans of migrants that have started to arrive at the U.S.-Mexico border. Bayer Azmi, a lawyer for the Center for Constitutional Rights, said this, quote, "Individuals are entitled to asylum if they cross between ports of entry. It couldn't be clearer," end quote. An estimated 70,000 people every year claim asylum between official ports at points of entry, including in the Arizona desert and on the north bank of the Rio Grande in Texas, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Migrants who cross illegally are generally arrested and often seek asylum or some other form of protection. We've talked about this many times, where they are told what to say. They are given the magic words. Even if they don't speak a word of English, they're told to tell the people who arrest them, "I want to seek asylum." They're told to use those words. And that puts them on the track that gets them out from under most of the problems that they are going to face otherwise. Well, on Monday, the U.S. closed off northbound traffic for several hours at the busiest border crossing with Mexico to install new security barriers, and also closed one of two pedestrian crossings at the San Ysidro crossing in a move apparently aimed at preventing any mass rush of migrants across the border. U.S. border inspectors are processing only about 100 asylum claims a day at Tijuana's main crossing to San Diego. Asylum seekers register their names in a tattered notebook managed by migrants themselves that had more than 3,000 names even before the caravan arrived. Homeland Security officials say there are currently 6,000 people in Tijuana waiting to be processed at the San Ysidro border crossing, with more on the way. During a conference call with reporters Monday afternoon, Homeland Security officials said, quote, "Most of the caravan members are not women and children, and that more than 500 criminals are traveling with the group that is amassed on the other side of a San Diego border crossing." Now, this is something I told you about again and again. Most of the caravan members, 90 to 95%, are young adult males. They're physically fit, working age, young adult males, 90 to 95% of them. That means they're really not coming here for asylum. They're coming here for money. Officials anticipate the new arrivals could swell the migrant caravan in excess of 10,000 and will need to be housed for an extended period of time, which the Mexican government says it lacks the resources for. The majority of the migrants who've been on foot for more than a month, and they've been riding. You've seen the video, just like I have. They've been hopping rides on trains and buses and semis, and they've been riding. They're sleeping on a dirt baseball field in an outdoor sports complex in Tijuana by the newly fortified barbed wire fence that separates Mexico from the United States. Despite the growing numbers, the Pentagon will reportedly start withdrawing a portion of the 5,800 troops deployed at the border this week, with the rest of the unit packing up before Christmas. Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan of the Army, he's overseeing that deployment, says our end date right now is December 15th, and I've got no indications from anybody that we'll go beyond that. I think primarily they were deployed for the sake of one, fortifying those points of entry, all that razor wire, and to make a statement. Hey, we're sending the military. We're serious about this. And that time, that ship has kind of sailed. So they're going to be pulling them back. Now, this whole situation at the border, it's completely and totally political. There are people manipulating it behind the scenes. There are things happening in order to put pressure on the United States. This is very, very typical for activists, progressive activists. You've heard of the Cloward and Piven, who came up with the, or spelled out the way to break a system, is that you overload it. You overload a system, a government system, so that it has to be torn down and rebuilt again. And when that happens, then the progressives can step in and rebuild it the way they want it to be. Well, in a way, that's what's happening with this situation at the border. We have progressives who are trying to overload the American system, the system of immigration, so that they, their agents, can step in and rebuild it so that we are a borderless nation. More to come after the break here on The Daily Perspective. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here with you. Hopefully you're having a good day today. Thanks for being there. And thanks for signing up for The Daily Perspective newsletter. The more and more people are signing up daily. And just a little hint, if you have signed up and have not received a Daily Perspective newsletter, for example, if you signed up before yesterday and didn't get one yesterday, you might want to go double check and make sure that your email address is correct. Okay? Because I get these little notices from MailChimp, which is what I use to distribute the newsletter, that there are problems now and then. And I saw one pop up yesterday. So if you didn't get one and you signed up recently, then double check and make sure you've entered your email address correctly. And make sure that your email provider, whether it be Gmail or Hotmail or AT&T or AOL or whoever, people still use AOL. At any rate, make sure that everything is kosher and they're not going to give you a problem. Dave and I had a problem once long ago in the past. The reason I bring that up with AOL is we had a newsletter subscriber list of about 3,500 people, and we were sending this newsletter out every day to everybody. And the way, if you have signed up, you know how this works. You sign up, you fill in the form, and then you get an email from MailChimp, our current provider. You get an email double verifying that you really want to subscribe. It's a double opt-in process. That's the way I set these up, because that way you say, I think I'd like to subscribe. Let me fill out the form. And then you get an email to make really sure you want to subscribe, which you have to respond to. You click the link in the email, and okie dokie, you're signed up. So you have initiated the contact and then confirmed that you wanted to subscribe. And that's how we've always done it. It's always been done that way, because that eliminates that whole, well, I didn't sign up for this claim from people who wanted to accuse you of spamming them. Well, AOL threatened our website, our web host at the time, and they threatened them with legal action, claiming that we were spammers. And that was crazy. It was just craziness, because at the time we had the double opt-in process, and everybody who signed up had to fill out the form and then, yeah, on that second touch, say, I'm sure, yes. Every last one of them. We didn't borrow anybody or buy anybody's lists. Everybody was completely organic and signed up through our website. Every last one of them. But AOL was saying we were spamming people. Why? Because rather than going to the link at the bottom of every email that says unsubscribe here, they would just drop the email in their spam folder. Or they would report it as spam when they got tired of getting the emails. Hey, to some people, they just get tired of getting an email from somebody every day. I do that myself. I know you do too. I know I signed up for this, but you just sent, I'm tired of it. Stop. Well, and sometimes you sign up for something that you were really, really interested in at the time. But a few months, a year or so later, you're going, you know, I don't ever read these things. And you unsubscribe. Well, these people hadn't been subscribed. They just tossed us in the wastebasket or in the spam or something like, or whatever they did at AOL. And the next thing you know, we're being accused of being spammers. They just marked the emails as spam. And it wasn't. So we make sure everything is double opted in. I've always made sure of that whenever we set up a mailing list. So if you went through that process, you filled out the form on the website, you hit the landing page where you sign up for the newsletter or subscribe for the newsletter, and you filled everything out, and then you confirmed, yes, I really want to be on there, and you haven't gotten anything, double check and make sure everything is right. And it may be with your email host where you're having problems. Just a word to the wise. Okay. All right. Wow. Did I get myself sidetracked there? I got myself so sidetracked. I actually had the email graphic all ready to load up for Facebook Live and I never did it. See there it is right there. Okay. Back to the flag. Back to A&E. Oh my gosh. You know, A&E has some really weird stuff. They have some cool stuff, but also they have some strange stuff. They have this documentary series, a docuseries about the Clintons. And it's on Sunday nights. It's a mini series called The Clinton Affair. And they took pot shots. A&E took pot shots at conservatives in their attempt to create a sympathetic portrayal of Bill and Hillary Clinton. While praising Clinton as a feminist president, the network gave sound bites to Democrats attacking anyone on the right who dared to criticize the political couple for their numerous scandals. Right from the get-go, the series portrayed conservatives and Republicans as the villains of the story, with a barrage of sound bites from journalists and Clinton operatives attacking Newt Gingrich, independent counsel Ken Starr, and anyone who dared to be critical of the Clintons as fueled by Republican lies. Out for a witch hunt against President Clinton. Joe Lockhart, he was a Clinton White House press secretary, he said, Democrats lose elections and they get sad. Republicans lose elections and they get mad. And when they're mad, there's payback. Wow. Joe Lockhart said that. And doesn't that, you recognize that behavior, you know? You reckon, look at what's happening right now with Stacey Abrams in Georgia. A Democrat lost the election. She didn't get sad. She's mad. She's swearing lawsuits. She's saying it's illegitimate. That's what Democrats do. Republicans, if it's close and they see clear fraud, they'll speak up. And the Democrats are the ones who get mad and do payback. David Brock over at Media Matters, God love him, says people that I was associated with wanted the Clintons to be brought down on personal scandal. Joe Connison, House Republicans were salivating. This was the next water grate. Jane Sherburn, the attorney for Hillary Clinton, she was an attorney for Hillary Clinton, says this. They wanted to execute a search warrant in the White House. Starr was out to destroy the president. Peter Baker, he was a New York Times correspondent to the White House, said he knows they're out there to get him. He knows that he's being hunted, and yet he could be so reckless. Well, the series also gave sound bites exclusively to liberal journalists who slammed the right as being unfairly critical to Hillary Clinton simply because she was a feminist, while praising her as tough amidst the criticism. David Brock said, you add Hillary into the mix, who was a feminist. All of that drove the conservatives crazy. I was part of the movement of the opposition to Clinton. The conservatives actively sought to engage in certain tactics that hadn't been fair game before. Really? Katie Couric said, Hillary's has a staff that's gotten high marks for its ability, organization, and protectiveness. I can't help but notice that this is an all-chick staff, she chuckles. All women on this staff. Joe Klein said the president's feeling was she's his intellectual equal, so why not? Joe Connison says because she was willing to step out in front politically, she became a lightning rod and an object of hatred. Wow. I want to get back to that in just a second. Moving on, though. Who did A&E blame for Hillary becoming an object of hatred? Right-wing commentators and Republicans, of course. Immediately after those sound bites, the network played clips of Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh criticizing Hillary for implementing policy as first lady. Klein also touted that the Clintons were tough as nails, while Clinton operative and cable news regular James Carville gushed, "He was tough. This guy had like stamina. He could take a lick. I mean, what was the old Timex, you know, he could take a licking and keep on taking?" Wow. Let's go back here. Because she was willing to step out in front politically, she became a lightning rod and an object of hatred. Really? And the clips they played, right-wing commentators and Republicans, immediately after the sound bites, they played clips of Gingrich and Limbaugh criticizing Hillary for implementing policy as first lady. You know why? I remember listening to the shows. I remember watching. I remember seeing all this happening. She was first lady. She was not elected to a government position. She was married to a man elected president. Did you know that there was a battle when they moved into the White House? And I don't mean her throwing lamps at Bill. I mean, there was a battle between Hillary Clinton and Al Gore for the vice president's office. She wanted the vice president's office. She insisted that she and Bill were a team, that they were co-president, and that she should have the office of the vice president. Not his title, his physical office, and that he would be relegated to the first lady's office elsewhere. She insisted. She fought for it. This is how she saw herself. And Bill, knowing he didn't want another lamp thrown at him, apparently didn't fight her on this. So this is the kind of people we're talking about. An unelected person. This is why there was such an uproar. I remember this. She was not elected. Bill was elected. Bill Clinton was elected president, not Hillary. Yet she wanted to wield political power. Remember, she was the one behind Hillary Care. She tried to institute single-payer health care in this country way back in the early 90s. And people said, "What are you, nuts?" So she has always been power-hungry and still is today. Stick around. More to come on The Daily Perspective. Hi, how are you? You're listening to The Daily Perspective. And thank you so much for being there. I say that enough. I don't know if I can say it enough, honestly. It's an honor to have you join this little show every day. Thank you so much. Still something to talk about here, but let's see. Is there anything else I need to take care of? I done then so. I think we're pretty much there, except to remember, we're not only here on Facebook. We're also over on Twitter as well. So if you're into Twitter, look The Daily Perspective and The Mark and Mac Show up on Twitter, because we're there every day. Also, I talk about Gab every now and then, the social media platform. It's an upstart that's run by a Christian man who believes that free speech is free speech. And as a result, he got deplatformed by GoDaddy.com. And a week later, he's back up and running. The site is struggling a bit, because they're having to rebuild something that they had built before and had worked bugs out of before, and then they lost it all because GoDaddy shut the doors on them. And so they've had software engineers working on things, rewriting code, trying to get things back up and running again, And they're stumbling a little bit, but it looks like they're back up and running again. And they have some terms of service, which are very straightforward, but they don't, they believe in speech, free speech. And that's something that I respect them for. And some people are saying, yeah, but people look at the speech, people are crude. Look at the language they're using, and they're look at the hate and yada. Well, sadly, the Supreme Court has declared that hate speech is also free speech, because you are free to speak your mind. If you're not, then you're living under, okay, well, you're living under fascism if you're not free to speak your mind. Well, it's interesting to note how many people are pro-fascism in the Twitterverse and on Facebook. They want people shut down for what they think and what they say. The reality is, in the real world, it's actually better if you just let them speak their mind. Because if you let them reveal themselves for who and what they really are, people will shun them. Sure, some people will agree, some people will follow, but that will be a tiny, tiny number of people. And most people will open their eyes, raise their eyebrows, and go, oh my, that's what those people believe? Well, they're nuts. Avoid them. That's how free speech works. And speaking of free speech, when you're being paid, when you're on somebody's property, when you're doing something in a private location, you really don't have as much free speech as you would hope to, because you try. It's the old adage of screaming fire in a crowded theater. That's not free speech. That's not protected. Well, the White House Correspondents Association announced Monday that they're having their own little free speech interpretation. They've decided to hire historian and author Ron Chernow to be the featured speaker at their annual dinner in April, remaking the event with a serious tone after the blow-up over comedian Michelle Wolf's performance at this year's event. Mr. Chernow is an eminent biographer for American presidents and statesmen. He said, I'm delighted that Ron will share. Well, that was not him. Oliver Knox, he's the chief Washington correspondent for SiriusXM and the president of the White House Correspondents Association, said, I'm delighted Ron will share his lively, deep, researched perspectives on American politics and history at the 2019 White House Correspondents Dinner. He must be a liberal. As we celebrate the importance of a free and independent news media to the health of a republic, I look forward to hearing Ron place this unusual moment in the context of American history. Earlier this year, Mr. Knox said his inbox was flooded with suggestions to improve the annual dinner after Ms. Wolf's blistering attacks from the dais targeting White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders and White House Senior Advisor Kellyanne Conway. The most common suggestion there were a couple of them, no comic or a serious speaker. Ms. Wolf responded on Twitter saying she couldn't be prouder that she forced the change. Quote, the WCHA are cowards. The media is complicit, and I couldn't be prouder. Whew. Remember, she contributes to The Daily Show and Late Night with Seth Meyers on a regular basis. Mr. Chernow said the association asked him to make the case for the First Amendment, which has always been the centerpiece of the event. He said he's happy to oblige. Yada, yada, yada. So, no comic this year. I guess that means 2 years running without anything funny happening at the dinner. Hey, Jim Acosta's press pass was restored by the White House. They also gave him a warning not to behave. Speaking of the White House Correspondents Association, Jim Baby Acosta. They said yesterday they restored his press pass. They warned him and the rest of the press corps that his disruptive antics will not be tolerated. In a statement to the reporters covering the White House, Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said reporters called upon at a press conference will be limited to a single question unless explicitly given permission for more, and they must yield the microphone when prodded. Both of those directives are aimed directly at Mr. Acosta, who the White House has accused of using his perch at CNN for grandstanding at the expense of President Trump and other reporters. Ms. Sanders said, we have created these rules with a degree of regret. She points to years of press conferences that went off without the behavior of Mr. Acosta, when he verbally sparred with Mr. Trump and then pushed aside the arm of an intern who tried to collect the microphone. She goes on to say, we would have greatly preferred to continue hosting White House press conferences in reliance on a set of understood professional norms. And we believe the overwhelming majority of journalists covering the White House share that preference. But given the position taken by CNN, we now feel obligated to replace previously shared practices with explicit rules. Now, that was a reference to the lawsuit CNN filed. And other organizations, news organizations, joined, asserting the White House was violating the First Amendment press freedoms and Mr. Acosta's Fifth Amendment due process rights by stripping him of his credentials to access the White House's grounds after the incident. The decision to restore his press pass is a reversal from last week when the White House sent a letter signaling it had made a preliminary decision to revoke it. It's been a back and forth kind of thing. And I really don't think we've seen the last of it. And I think it's just a matter of time before Acosta forgets himself again. I don't know. That's probably wrong. Before Mr. Acosta begins behaving naturally again and decides to be the center of attention. And it ends up getting him bumped again. And of course, he'll whine and cry and CNN will pitch a fit. And journalists will join in with them and say, this is not fair. First Amendment, Fifth Amendment. Yeah, well, you've been warned. There are rules. Behave or get bumped. That's what it amounts to now. This is the situation with the White House. It's just lunacy that this one guy, Jim Acosta, you know, I played you the clip of him the other day, one day last week, of him at the Easter egg dye, the Easter egg coloring with the president. Little children sitting around, they're all coloring Easter eggs with the president of the United States. And Jim Acosta is asking, what about the Mexican children, sir? What about the dreamers? Didn't you kill DACA, sir? At this event, it's just a sweet photo op event with little kids getting to go to the White House and color Easter eggs with the president. Something that's been done for years upon years upon years. And Jim Acosta stands in the crowd, raising his voice to be heard over the sounds of shutters clicking. When nobody else is asking questions. Why? Because in that setting, it's inappropriate. That's not where you do something like that. It's just not done. But Jim Acosta doesn't care about that. Jim Acosta is a social justice warrior. He is an activist. His goal is, as a progressive reporter, activist, is to, as I've said, be the advocate for the downtrodden, the advocate for the oppressed. And he sees the president and his administration and really all conservatives as the oppressors. And so he will continue to fight. He will continue, you just watch. He will continue to phrase his questions, even though he may be limited to one without a follow-up. He will phrase his questions in such a way that they condemn the person he's asking the question of. Because that is how people like him assert their power, speaking truth to power. When in reality, they're exercising their delusions. Bless their hearts. Jim Acosta. God love him. Well, that's it for today. Hey, just a reminder, it's a short week for most everybody, so no podcast on Thanksgiving Day or Friday this week, but we'll be back next Monday. And we'll see you tomorrow here on The Daily Perspective. God bless. Bye-bye.